I'm Jonquilin Hill, and from WAMU and PRX, this is Through the Cracks, a podcast about the gaps in our society and the people who fall through them.
R-E-L-I-S-H-A.
I didn't know what was going on. The police officer, you know your granddaughter, Alicia Rudd, is missing. No, she's not. Yes, she is, ma'am. No, she's not. She's with Khalil Tatum.
This season on Through the Cracks, we're investigating the disappearance of Alicia Rudd. Alicia disappeared when she was 8 years old and her family was living in a homeless shelter in Southeast D.C. It took 18 days for anyone to realize she was missing. We'll look at the world Alicia grew up in. Her school, her family, the shelter where she lived.
Everybody asks how he got so close to the family. When I first met Khalil Tatum, he wasn't always a janitor at the shelter. He was the kitchen staff, the cafeteria dude.
Was Relisha's disappearance really, as the city claimed, unpreventable? And why was Khalil Tatum, who would become the prime suspect in her disappearance, working in the shelter to begin with?
Relisha has not been seen by anyone since March 1st. Yet Mr. Tatum continued to go to work and was seen in multiple locations throughout the District of Columbia between March 2nd and March 20th. Alicia was not with Mr. Tatum in any of those sightings.
On this episode of Through the Cracks, who was Khalil Tatum? And why did Alicia's family trust him? After Alicia went missing, Khalil Tatum quickly became the top person of interest. That's because some of Alicia's family members said the last time they saw her was with Tatum. Tatum wasn't just the janitor at DC General, the shelter where Alicia and her family lived. For Shamika, Alicia's mom, he seemed to be a trusted family friend, and he looked after Alicia when she asked him to. And it wasn't just Alicia's family who trusted Khalil Tatum. Tatum was well-liked and trusted by a lot of the people he knew, especially by the people living in D.C. General. His own family, too. They knew him as Carl.
No, Carl was his name. Khalil was the name that he changed to when he went to prison.
That's Alexis Kelly. Her mother, Andrea, was married to Tatum. Alexis had no idea that one day Tatum would be wanted for her mother's murder and that he would take his own life before he could answer any questions.
Carl was, like, extremely smart. He can talk to you about anything. And he was funny. He was well-dressed. He was caring. He was giving. Anything anybody needed, he would give someone the shirt off his back.
Alexis knew Tatum most of her life. She was a little girl when her mom began her relationship with him.
He came into our lives. I was maybe 4 or 5, but he was in and out of prison so much, so it wasn't like a constant thing. Like, he wasn't there every day, all day. He had done, like, long stints in jail, like 10 years here, 8 years here, 2 and 3 years here. So he spent most of his time in prison.
Tatum had a criminal record for larceny, burglary, and breaking and entering. As we mentioned in the last episode, his record should have disqualified him from having any position at the shelter. It was against the shelter's policies. With Tatum in and out of prison, Andrea's marriage to him wasn't always the most traditional. Often, Andrea had to live life on her own, and that was okay.
She had a lot of friends. My mother was loved. And I was kind of jealous of that because I felt like they were taking my time away from me sometimes. So I would get jealous if she was, like, on the phone with other people or if she was going somewhere with other people. And I would just get mad and I wouldn't talk to her for, like, 2-3 hours because I was jealous. So, but she didn't care. She was like, okay, call me when you're over it.
It sounds like she was really outgoing.
She really was. She was outgoing. She was outspoken. She loved to laugh. My mom had this laugh that was, like, tongue out laugh. It was so funny. She just had this bubbly personality, and she very rarely got upset.
Alexis told me her mom wasn't perfect. She worked through a drug problem, kept a job at a health club, and raised her 5 kids. As for Khalil Tatum and his frequent absences, Alexis described her mom's attitude as out of sight, out of mind.
I don't think her last name was ever legally changed. So she's gone by Tatum sometimes, I guess, when it was necessary for her, but Kelly has always been, and it may have been hyphenated, I don't know. I just always is Andrea Kelly, because Kelly is my last name, so, and it's also all my siblings' last name.
When they were together, though, things were good.
He worshipped the ground my mom walked on. Whatever my mom wanted, she got it. She wanted a new car. That February, I believe, he went and brought her a brand new car. Whatever jewelry she wanted, he knows she loved jewelry. Like, he would always buy her jewelry. And some people were saying, like, he was buying her silence or whatever, but it always spoiled my mom. Always.
So that's a picture of Khalil Tatum's family. In the shelter where he worked, he was mostly well-liked.
Everybody knows him. You know, he bought my daughter a fish tank, but I stopped it there. Mm-mm, no more gifts.
DC General had a policy against fraternization, meaning employees were supposed to be extremely professional with shelter residents and not develop personal relationships with them. Relisha's family's relationship with Tatum didn't develop overnight. In DC General, parents were supposed to be with their children at all times, in the cafeteria, going to the showers, in the play areas. But Relisha's grandmother, Melissa, remembers Khalil Tatum making sure Relisha and her brothers got a meal, even if their mom wasn't with them in the cafeteria.
Like I said, Relisha would do the mother, big daughter thing and take them down for breakfast. That's how Relisha came in contact with Tatum, because he would always say, well, you know, her mother is in the bathroom, that's why they down here. She asked me to make sure they get their breakfast, something like that, so my daughter wouldn't get in trouble.
At some point, Khalil Tatum transitioned into a different job at the shelter. He became a janitor, and he grew even closer to Shamika and her kids. This is Antonio, Relisha's stepdad.
By this time, Shamika was like, did you know he was her godfather? No, he's not her godfather. And I told him to his face, you're not her godfather. Stay away from my daughter. So Shamika, keep Relisha away from this man. Did she listen? No.
Shamika hasn't agreed to an interview with us, but multiple people we've spoken with confirmed that she trusted Tatum. Melissa told us that Relisha would play with Khalil Tatum's granddaughter. Occasionally, she'd even sleep over. Ashley, Relisha's aunt and Shamika's sister, thought the arrangement was a little weird, just like Antonio did. As the months at DC General went by, Relisha spent more and more time at her auntie Ashley's because she hated living at the shelter. So the first time Ashley actually met Khalil Tatum, it was when he came to her house to pick Relisha up.
I never knew him before then. That was the first time I got to meet him. And the questions that I had for him was, well, where do you know my family from? Basically, how did you get my number? How did you get my address? Me, honestly, I'm just auntie. No, I didn't really know who he was. Did I fully trust him? I'm gonna be honest, no, because I didn't know him like that. But at the same time, hearing the things that he was doing with my niece, they was going to little parks with the kids or things like that, I didn't have any problem. At the same time, I do wish I would have stood my ground and say no, she couldn't go. But again, you can't overstep what the parents are saying.
So in Relisha's life, there were a number of adults looking after her. Her mother, Shamika, her stepfather, Antonio, her grandmother, Melissa, her aunt, Ashley, and Khalil Tatum. She also went to Payne Elementary School, and there were a lot of adults in her life there. Antonio remembers going to school to pick up Relisha's younger brothers and running into the school social worker, Labonet Workman.
I seen him, and I was asking him where the boys is at. He was like, yeah, the boys is at this, it's in the cafeteria. And I went to the cafeteria to get him, and as I'm walking back out, he was like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you that. Relisha's doctor had called and everything. She's in the clear because she hadn't been to school in a couple of days. I'm like, huh? She hadn't been to school? I didn't know.
Labonet is not just the school social worker. He's also Payne's homelessness liaison. So in addition to his job, he also keeps track of unhoused kids and makes sure the school is meeting their needs. One of his responsibilities is to keep an eye on school attendance. If a student has missed 3, 5, and then 10 days of school, school staff is supposed to intervene. We really wanted to interview Labonet, but officials at DC Public Schools really didn't want us to talk with him. They delayed and delayed and then finally denied our interview request.
Quiet kids sometimes don't get the notice, and that's how she was.
But in 2015, Labonet did speak with the Washington Post. We asked one of our colleagues to read his quotes from that interview. Labonet had seen excuse notes for Relisha, and this is when our investigation gets murky and complicated. The school got a number of notes excusing Relisha's absence. According to the Washington Post, at least one doctor's note was given to the school by Relisha's grandmother, Melissa. And that note said Relisha was out sick, and it included the doctor's phone number. When we asked the police to verify who wrote and delivered the notes, they declined, saying that they can't provide this amount of detail about an open and active case. Melissa says she didn't write or deliver any notes excusing Relisha from school. Labonet says, at the time, he didn't think anything was amiss.
I've heard of doctors taking a special interest in patients. I was glad someone was trying to help her.
So, nah, I said, so, okay, so you talked to her doctor? He's like, yeah. I said, okay, cool, that's fine.
At the time, Antonio was working a job in Pennsylvania, so he was back and forth a lot and probably not up to speed with what was going on with the kids. Labonet told the Washington Post that he and the doctor exchanged phone calls several times over the next week. The doctor told Labonet that he was treating Relisha for neurological issues and that Labonet should fax him the dates when Relisha missed school so that he could write the excuse notes. Labonet told the Post that, in retrospect, the doctor sounded, quote,
not doctorish,
on the phone. On March 19th, the heat wasn't working in half of Payne Elementary. Labonet happened to take a phone call with the doctor from the principal's office where the heat was working, and the principal told him to go get the excuse note directly from the doctor. But Labonet didn't know where the doctor's office was. So he went to the shelter and started asking around. The doctor's name was Tatum, so Labonet asked the shelter employees, where was this Dr. Tatum? He was told, no, there's no Dr. Tatum here. But there was a janitor whose name was Tatum. This is the moment when the first city official in Relisha's life realized something wasn't right. And I think it's worth asking, why didn't someone at the school notice sooner? I didn't get to ask that question, but I think I know the answer. There were a lot of kids living at DC General, and most, if not all, went to Payne Elementary. So Labonet was keeping tabs on a lot of children. Once Labonet realized something was up, he took action immediately. He called the city hotline for child abuse. That same day, the police got involved, and Labonet was at the shelter when detectives began questioning Relisha's family. Antonio arrived in the middle of the chaos.
When I walked in, he was asking, do I know a Dr. Tatum? I said, no, I don't know no Dr. Tatum. I know a Mr. Tatum. He looked at me with a stupid look on his face, like, oh, shit.
Antonio says this was the first time he'd heard that the note excusing Relisha had the name Tatum on it.
Me and him had a dispute because he told me everything was fine, but he never told me who wrote it.
So at this time, no one knows where Relisha is. Not her family, not the school. But everyone thinks she's with Khalil Tatum. Antonio told us something very strange and inexplicable. When the police were still there, questioning everyone in that conference room at the shelter, he says he went outside for a smoke.
So I asked to be escorted outside because they wouldn't let me out that site for some reason. So I asked, y'all come outside with me so I can smoke a cigarette. So by this time, I'm nervous. And if by this time, I didn't know what was going on. All I know is she was supposed to be at Aunt's house, but somehow Mr. Tatum supposed to have got her. So I'm outside scratching my head, smoking a cigarette, and I sees Tatum. He's pushing his cart. I'm not gonna never forget. Pushing his cart.
His janitor's cart. Something you would see him do every day outside the shelter.
And I asked him, I said, Mr. Tatum, they talking about Alicia missing. He like, who? I'm like, the police. I'm like, where my daughter at? I'm like, oh, no. She's at my house with my wife. I'm going to go get her right now and try and keep your daughter. Those are his words to me. I'm not trying to keep your daughter.
After this encounter, Antonio says he went back to the conference room.
Did the police know he said that to you or that you saw him?
I told him. You know, the police got on me. Or why you alarming them? You know, we already had this in play. I'm like, I wasn't supposed to say nothing. Y'all ain't tell me not to say nothing. But I think as any parent would have asked where their child was at.
There's a lot here that makes me skeptical. If police went outside with Antonio, why didn't they also see Tatum pushing his cart? When Antonio went back inside and told them they'd just seen Tatum, why didn't police rush out and apprehend him? I don't think Antonio is necessarily making up what he saw, but I also can't fact check it. The police declined our interview requests. We do know that on this day, March 19th, the first missing posters for Relisha Rudd were made. After the break, everyone in the shelter finds out that Relisha is missing. We'll be right back.
I'm Jenny Gathright. I work at WAMU and DCist, the same people that brought you Through the Cracks. I cover policing, jail and prison conditions, and the court system. I know that since you are checking out Through the Cracks, these are important issues to you, and you think about them critically. You can check out my reporting on these important local issues at DCist.com. I'm Jenny Gathright. I'm a reporter at WAMU, the people that brought you Through the Cracks. I cover policing, jail and prison conditions, and the court system. Since you're here, I know you think about these issues with the same critical lens I do in my work. Listen live at WAMU.org to stay up to date with the latest news, including my reporting.
Long before I wrote the first episode of Through the Cracks, I spent almost a year working with my colleagues at WAMU on grant applications to make this podcast possible. And before we can dive into another season of Through the Cracks, we'll be submitting another round of applications. But you have the power to speed up the funding process by making a donation to Through the Cracks. Support the investigative reporting that fuels this podcast by giving at WAMU.org/supportthroughthecracks. Thank you.
Yeah, so it was the most surreal time ever.
On the day Relisha's disappearance made the news, Jamila Larson, who runs the Playtime Project at the shelter, happened to have a meeting with one of the police lieutenants to discuss a different case.
The story just broke that morning, and so I was able to leave that meeting with a stack of FBI flyers with Khalil Tatum, the suspect, on them. And we went straight to DC General and started putting them up everywhere because it was like the one thing that we felt like we could do with our grief and anxiety. And within hours, the flyers were taken down, allegedly by staff, former colleagues of Khalil Tatum in the shelter. So it was a very, very tense, very scary environment.
Shelter employees apparently didn't believe that Khalil Tatum had anything to do with Relisha's disappearance. But word was out anyway, and many of the children who lived in the shelter were on edge.
The kids were obviously extremely anxious because it's like the worst nightmare come true. Like a man who you know, who has keys to your room, is accused of doing the worst thing possible. And I remember many kids coming home from the metro from school, they would come running up to us and say, did they find her yet? Did they find her yet? There's just this palpable anxiety that you could just feel in the air.
Still, Khalil Tatum, no one could believe he was involved.
A lot of the teens had known him, and some of them even referred to him affectionately as their godfather as well, and had a really hard time believing that he would do something like that. So we heard a lot from families that he didn't necessarily have the creepy vibe that you would maybe expect, and that he really endeared himself to a lot of residents, like a lot of predators actually do. And then some parents had super acute parental instincts and were really suspicious of the gifts and things that he had offered their kids. But the teens were feeling really conflicted because, again, like they had a hard time wrapping their head around how could this man that we trusted in the seam, who was nice to us, do something like that.
Nobody apparently saw anything seriously wrong with Khalil Tatum. He was a trusted member of the shelter staff. Yes, there were a few parents who thought that his generosity might have been a little odd, but otherwise, there were no obvious red flags.
I don't want you to think that I was not really feeling him.
For Alexis, Tatum's wife's adult daughter, her view of Tatum changed March 20th. Alexis was at work scrolling through Instagram and saw a picture of her mom's car, the new one. She says she wouldn't have recognized it, but it was next to a car she did recognize because it had the vanity plate, Khalil. The Instagram post was asking for more information about Relisha Rudd, a missing girl she had never met. After she saw the post, Alexis and a coworker got in a car and drove to the home her mother shared with Khalil Tatum to try to figure out what was going on. She knew it was unlikely that Andrea would be there. She'd called Alexis to say she was staying at a hotel because her heat was out. When Alexis got to Andrea's home, she found that the police were standing at the door. They said it was a crime scene and that no one was inside. They let Andrea go in to look around the unit, and she saw nothing was out of place. Then one officer took her aside.
Well, so he's kind of talked around the situation. So at this point, I'm getting nervous. So I'm like, where's my mom? So he was like, they were at a hotel, which I knew they were at a hotel because her heat was out. My mom was anemic and she didn't like being cold. So she left the house to go to the hotel until her heat was fixed. So she's like, she was at the hotel. I said, I'm aware. Where is she now? So he's like, well, when we got to the hotel, there was someone suffering. No, he said there was someone laying in the bed. And then he said, when we pulled the cover back, and it was your mom. She was suffering from a gunshot wound. So I'm like, okay, if she was suffering from a gunshot wound, like, where is she? Like, is she at the hospital? Like, did she make it? Like, what? Where is she? I said, at this point, like, I'm panicking. And he's like, you know, calm down. It's okay. I said, look me in my face. And I'm going to look you in your face. And I need you to be honest with me. I said, is my mom dead? And he looked at me and he said, yes. And everything else went numb after that. I got out of the car and my coworker said, like, I fell in the middle of the street. And she picked me up out of the middle of the street. She set me on the curb. And the first thing that was going through my head was like, my son was supposed to be with her that night. And I have no doubt in my mind that he would have killed my son. Then the second thing is like, my mom is gone. Like she's really gone. And I could not wrap my head around that. And every time, like I constantly called her phone, kept calling her phone. Just like, she's gonna answer. And she never answered. And that was like, yeah, it was like, that was the hardest day of my life.
Thank you.
Alexis told me again and again that the Carl she grew up with and the Khalil Tatum on the news did not seem like they were the same person. But in hindsight, she remembered that she and her mom sensed a change earlier that year.
And one time he asked her if he could get a gun. My mom's like, you're a convicted felon. First of all, how are you going to get a gun? Like, how are you going to do that? You can't just go to a gun store and say, hey, I'm a convicted felon. I need a weapon. So I feel like he already had this weapon. And my mom, she was terrified of guns. So I felt like he already had this weapon in the house. He just was trying to get her to agree to it before he told her it was there. So had we, you know, gone to the house to see if it was there, we probably would have found the weapon that he killed her with. I don't know if he became this monster when he came home or when he started working at the shelter or if it was always there, but that's just not who I saw.
Khalil Tatum died before he could be arrested and charged. But Alexis doesn't need a trial. She's certain that Tatum killed her mother. And even though she's still very much grieving, she's forgiven him. She says she's had dreams about Tatum and her mom and that these dreams have brought her some peace. But what happened? It's fundamentally changed her.
It definitely made trusting people hard. It made loving people hard. I just didn't want to be loved the way that Carl loved my mom, because I felt like if someone can love you the way that I know he loved my mom and can still kill you, like I don't want that. I don't want that kind of love. So much that they feel that they can't live without me, or they don't want me in this world without them, or I don't want someone to think maybe she had something to do with this and, you know, she may have to suffer consequences behind what I've done, so let me kill her. I don't want that type of love. So trusting and loving has definitely been difficult. It's definitely been difficult.
And the search for Relisha Rudd, the discovery of Andrea's body added an extreme urgency to the search for Khalil Tatum. Before he was a person of interest in a girl's disappearance, now he was the primary suspect in a homicide. His car was still at that hotel, but no one knew where he was or where Relisha was.
Then they like, well, she wasn't there, but we found Khalil's wife with a gunshot wound to the head dead in the room. The TV was left on cartoons, though.
Next time on Through the Cracks, the search for Relisha.
Oh, we had no idea she was missing. I believe that she was declared missing that day. We had no idea this child had been missing since February, nor apparently did a lot of other people, including people who were responsible for her.
You know, we were literally like ping-ponging with Khalil Tatum. He'd be somewhere, we'd be there right after him. And we were, I mean, there was this like cat and mouse chase that was going on where we were like right there.
Before we were able to really get into the meat and potatoes of the search, it concluded within about, I would say 40 minutes, because that's when Tatum's body was discovered.
Cracks is a production of WAMU and PRX. This podcast was made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and also by the Fund for Investigative Journalism. Patrick Fort is our producer. Ruth Tam is our digital editor. Ponce Rutsch is our senior producer. Special thanks to Greg Wynn for reading quotes for us. Our editor is Curtis Fox. Mike Kidd mixed this episode. Osei Hill designed our logo. Mona Kashvi oversees all the content we make here at WAMU. You can find out more about the show, look at photos of Relisha, and read transcripts of our episodes at wamu.org/through-the-cracks. You can also sign up for email updates.
That way, you'll be the first to know when we drop a new episode or bonus content. This podcast would not be possible without the generosity of listeners like you. To support the investigative reporting that powers Through the Cracks, give at wamu.org/supportthroughthecracks. I'm Jonquilin Hill. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode. Thanks for listening.